Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to The Sound of London. This is Londonist Out Loud. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe, and this week's episode is all about survival, using your wits and your knowledge of the environment to get by in a natural setting. If, like me, the extent of your survival skills is knowing where to find the plastic cutlery at Marks and Spencer's, don your hiking boots and pin back your ears, for together we are about to be educated in the skills of bushcraft.
Hey baby, let me take you down to a place of strange sights and sound. You ain't never seen the light before, just a stone's throw from your front door. Hey baby, sniff out me, see a piece of air, land in the sea. Some creep, some saw down the road, jam brand store.
My heart aches for some far off place.
Well, hello, hello from beneath the jungle canopy. We're in Highgate Wood. We're next to the Queenswood Cafe. We being myself and Wendy Payton of London Bushcraft. Hi.
Hi.
But London Bushcraft being what?
London Bushcraft aim is to reconnect people more with nature, in particular people living in an urban environment like London. A lot of people, especially with increase of technology, becoming more disconnected from their natural environment. So part of London Bushcraft aim is to connect people more with nature and using bushcraft as a medium to do that.
I mean, it seems on the face of it like you've got your work cut out for you. I don't know, listener, whether you're able to detect in the background the sound of a chainsaw, which is not working in the forest, but is tidying up somebody's front yard over that way. On the other side, there's a main road. We've got an adventure playground, a well-constructed cafe, and we're starting our bushcraft adventure with a latte in each hand. It's not exactly being called back to nature, is it?
No, not complete. It's not like going out into the Highlands in Scotland. However, it gives people a taste of something, and you'll be surprised about what you can achieve in terms of people, how they go away feeling at the end of the day after a day like this. Yeah, and how much they get out of it and get away with.
Well, we're going to start off. I'm not sure that we've got a fixed plan here, but we're going to try and cram as much bushcraft goodness into half an hour as we can. What have you got in mind for a first stop?
Let's go have a look at some plants.
Okay. I should say a thing or two maybe about Highgate Wood, because not everybody will be here all the time. How would you locate us?
It's right near Highgate Station on the Northern Line. It's about a 5 to 10 minute walk, depending on your pace of walking. It's very easy to get to. Although we are near the cafe, the further you go into the woods, you feel more and more remote, you know, away from the traffic.
Away from those children.
Or you might be with them, though.
Oh, do you do? Oh, you're often followed by the children?
No. So my courses are both for adults and children. Ah. They're just as popular with either.
I've seen things on TV that roughly resemble what we might be talking about here, and they always seem to end up with the presenter being obliged to eat some slug or something off the ground. We're not going down that road, are we?
I won't make you do anything you don't want to today.
No, that doesn't sound promising already.
So, this is the plant I just wanted to show you.
Oh, I thought we were going to leave the reservation here, but no, in fact, we've stopped. Just short of it.
And part of it, I also like to show people, you know, the little plants that are growing up in the cracks in the pavement. And part of why I like to do that is to show people that these plants are edible and medicinal, and they're growing in all sorts of hospitable places in London. And apparently London's the best place in the world, I've heard this quoted before, for foraging, because I've had so much green space. But I also like to show people the plant.
What? How can that possibly be true? The best place in the world?
No. The best city.
Oh, the best city.
The best city. I might have misled you there. The best city in the world because of all the green spaces. But I also like to point out the plants that grow up in the pavements, and this is one of them. One of the things I like about foraging is the plants don't need any care, and these are the sorts of plants that grow in your garden. So once you get to know these plants, even if you're living in London, you can go pick some or go to a park where there's not many dog walkers and pick yourself some medicinal herbs. So this is greater plantain.
I can tell we're already engaging with nature. We have put down Starbucks.
So greater plantain, and there's also called ribwort plantain, which both have the same medicinal problems. It's got a lot of ribs down the leaf, and you'll know it as a garden weed. It's got one of those things that you pop off. You ever do that as a kid? You flick those.
Oh yeah.
The seeds of people.
The fluffy thing, yeah.
Yeah, and you can. The young leaves are best eaten in spring, but you can also use it. It's good for healing wounds.
Mm.
So actually, my Polish friend was. They use this quite a bit, and she told me her grandma. Well, it's called grandmother's plaster. It's known as in Poland.
How does it operate?
So you chew it, and then you stick it on your wound. So your grandmother would chew it. I don't know if you want. It's not in a particularly good space, this one. Also, in foraging, especially in London, you have to pick your places to forage. So we're right near the main road, so we'll want to pick here, and probably a lot of dog walkers. So you'd want to pick where there's not so many dog walkers, away from traffic. And also, you need to know 110% what you're picking as well.
You're knocking on the door of a query that I've often wanted to put to somebody, and you might be the person. When you say it needs to be away from traffic, are you thinking in terms of the horrible exhaust pollution,
yeah,
that kind of thing?
Yeah, that gets absorbed into the soil over time, and or even the fumes on the, you know, on the existing stuff. So
tell me about when you go down a very busy road and you've got a grocer's shop there with all his fruit sitting right by the main road. That can't be good, can it?
No, it mustn't be good. However, I guess there's a more of a turnover. There's more of a turnover in the fruits being changed all the time. So I guess the impact's not as great.
That's maybe
not a scientific answer, but that's my feeling about it. Yeah. You're quite right, though. Yeah.
So I suppose one of the big problems I'm going to have today is describing the plants. I noticed on your website it says that you do plant identification. Mm-hmm. And at first I thought that just meant looking at a picture and picking out which were the plants. But mm-hmm. I think you're going to greater depth than that.
Well, for example, when you're looking at a plant, you've got to look, is it a tree or is it a little plant, and go from there. And also, these are going to change. It's very hard. I think it's best for people to need to really get a hands-on view. And I always, even if I was showing this to someone on a course, you really need to watch it through the different stages, because as a very young leaf, it's going to look quite different as well.
Oh, that's it.
So I recommend to all of people on my course, I show this is the plant, but you need to, you know, get to know it. It's almost like with foraging, you look at the forest and it all looks the same. When you start to get to know it, it's like seeing your friend in a group, in a crowd, and you can identify your friend. So you really need to wash it throughout the seasons as well to be able to get a good sense of what it's going to look like. So even if I describe it today, it's going to look slightly different in spring and things like that as well.
So this is about really getting in touch with the environment rather than just wandering in for a day.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
Something I've just realised that we should say here is whatever we say and however we describe it through the course of this podcast, please don't go into your local woods and shove something in your mouth or masticate it and shove it on a wound. You need to be, first of all, trained by an expert.
Yeah.
Well, that's where your courses come in.
Absolutely, definitely. There are some plants that are poisonous, either to the skin, irritants to the skin. There are some plants that are absolutely poisonous that you wouldn't want to ingest. So you do need to know what you're doing there.
Can you see any of those from where we are right now? I should say we're knelt down by the side here. We're looking into dense woods in front of us.
Yeah.
What can you see?
I can't see any umbellifers, the plants that you really need to go to. That's the family that hemlock belongs to. So that's one of the family of plants that you kind of really need to know what you're doing. I can't see any here at the moment. Another one is yew. That's highly poisonous, the little seed.
And do you, particularly when you're dealing with kids, do you flag that up or do you just pass over it?
On my course, especially the one-day courses, I'll identify things that are easy for people to identify, and also I'd only show children's things that they could easily identify. I wouldn't show them anything that looks similar to another plant.
Right.
So until people are going to get more go more in depth with the foraging, I'll start off gentle at the start and easier for people to identify.
So yeah, I was struck by that image of a friend in a crowd. So as I say, we're knelt here. We've got a couple of decent-sized trees looming over us,
yeah.
And various shrubs and bushes, and nearby some much lower-level stuff, half a foot tall. What are you seeing as you cast your eye across here?
This is hazel tree. I don't know if you want to go further away from the road,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, we certainly can do.
We'll see more of these plants later on.
As you cast your eye across, do you sort of see, there's a bunch of edible stuff over there, here's a bunch of stuff we need to be wary of?
Yeah, absolutely. So all the time my eyes, my husband are driving him insane when we go for a walk because I'm always looking and stopping and smelling plants and things like that. So yeah, you've got cherry tree, you've got oaks, you've got sycamore here, you've got elder. And that's just, you know, we've only walked literally about 10 metres or 15 metres, less than that.
Is this a well-stocked wood in that regard?
It's pretty good, yeah. I also find, though, some of the more open spaces for the smaller plants, like the weeds and things like that, like I've just identified up there, in places maybe you wouldn't expect to find, but sometimes they're, you know, they need more sunlight, so they're not so much in a woodlands as such.
We've set off with a reasonable sense of purpose. Where are we off to?
We're going to take a walk through the woods and we'll look at anything that... yeah, is of interest.
All right, I'm going to put myself in your hands then. And on our right, a sort of a barricade has been made to stop people from tumbling down the bank there. Lots of bits of wood all wound together. Same thing to our right, and a bench and a seating area. So it's all pretty sparse. Even beyond that, there's not much plant life going on there, really, on the face of it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of lower-level plants here because of the canopy of the trees are blocking that out, them from growing. We're in a woods now with mature trees, so that's where we're heading into now.
So that's the classic thing, that it stops the light and the goodness from getting to the stuff down below.
Yeah, if it's quite heavy, yeah, absolutely. This is hawthorn. I really like this tree, but a couple of things about it is you can eat the berries. It's one of the berries up there. It's not a very heavily laden tree.
Show me the berry. Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay, yeah, kind of a dull
and
orange.
You can also eat the leaves in springtime, or they're best eaten in springtime when they're soft. So also that's another foraging thing, to pick things when they're nice and green and not withered and horrible.
So that's going to be delicious, that berry up there.
I'll leave that up to you to...
Yeah, I'll give it a go. It's about 8 feet off the ground, so we're going to struggle to get to it, but I'm going to give it a try.
Okay.
Can I pass you the mic?
Yeah.
Right, here we go. Success! So there we go. We've got a hawthorn berry.
Now, it probably would be a bit nicer if it was a deeper red, but it's got a big seed in the middle, so you're just eating the flesh on the outside of that.
Okay.
You don't have any heart conditions, do you?
sound of man crashing to the floor.
If you're on heart medicine, this can amplify the effect of heart medicines. Quinton was very keen to eat that. I didn't get a chance to tell you about that.
Well, it's not exactly bursting with flavour.
No. I have made a fruit strap. So some of the things that you forage with, some of the plants are... You know, it's a big success in some ways. I made a fruit strap out of these.
You made a what?
Like a, you know, dried fruit strap where you get the...
Strap?
I've forgotten the correct word for it.
Salad?
Basically, you get all the pulp from the fruit and you dry it.
A smoothie? Oh, no.
And you dry it, so it's like a... Yeah, like a...
I've never heard of this. It sounds like witchcraft.
Well, apparently I would be a witch, apparently, because apparently you were classed as a witch if you went for a walk alone in the woods, you pick medicinal herbs, and you're affectionate towards animals or something like that. So, I am a witch in that case, then.
Well, I'll be observing you closely for other witchy behaviour.
This is my favourite outdoor loo paper.
Can I just give you a...
Sorry.
I hesitate to interrupt an intro like that. No, I just wanted to give you a post-match report on the hawthorn berry.
Yes, we didn't talk about that.
The flavour is creeping in.
Okay, and
it's got a vague sort of banana-y taste to it.
Yeah.
And I want to call it like a plum in texture, but only very, very faintly.
Yeah.
But not much flavour overall.
Yeah,
I won't be coming back to the hawthorn bush anytime soon.
You can also make sort of like a savoury sort of ketchup-like sauce from that as well. Your expression is priceless.
I don't think
you're rushing out to make that by the looks of it.
I think it would sell really well, wouldn't it? Because it's just so unusual.
Absolutely. And a lot of these, yeah, there's some cafes in London where this is becoming quite trendy.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. There's not a few, but I have been to, somewhere it's becoming more popular and trendy. I forgot to tell you about the hawthorn as well. And these are the kind of things I like to share with people because you start looking at nature in a different way. But apparently centuries ago, this used to be classed as taboo, the flowers taboo to bring into the house. And apparently more recent times, they've found that the blossom has the same chemical that of the decaying body. So hence, this plant would have been the flowers would have been associated with death. So I find that kind of thing really interesting.
It doesn't necessarily have some sort of negative effect in and of itself.
No. But it's just the smell. Hmm. But these are the kind of wacky facts I like to share with people.
I stopped you in the middle of saying something about toilet paper.
Yes. So Hazel, this is my own, I don't know, you don't really call it an invention, but idea. Of using a hazel leaf.
The invention is to do what I think you're going to do, that's not an invention.
Now let me pick you a bit to see if you think this is a nice ply.
A bit of description very quickly. The hawthorn that we came from, very, very tall, branches quite high up, a spindly sort of tree. These hazel that we're looking at are much more like, they're kind of bushy, really.
And yeah, it is, and it has a
spray out, don't they?
Yeah, a lot of straight, long branches rather than one thick one.
Big flat leaves.
Yeah, and they've got a little tip on the end of it as well, and they're very soft. The leaves, they're kind of round, the round leaves as well with the tip on them, and they're very soft as well.
And there's a little perforation line across the middle, so that I'm making that up.
So this is your eco-friendly toilet paper. I believe. I don't know how much you want me to go on about
I was just thinking in the spirit of the last bush, should I give it a try? No, I'm not going to do that, not even for the podcast.
Because I'll tell you the reason why
have you tried it?
Yeah.
Under what circumstances?
Oh, when I'm going for a walk in the woods and I don't want to leave toilet paper.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, it's very environmentally friendly. So
I can see why your husband disengages. Not this again.
The reason I've picked this paper is because the wood is also very good for cooking on. So if you want to, say, make some bread.
Use different leaves.
Well, some wood is not good. Like the elder tree is really not good for cooking on. Some are toxic.
What do you mean when you say cooking on?
So if you wanted to make a natural grill. Or you wanted to wrap, you wanted to make a cross and put some fish over and lean it over the fire.
I think I need a picture of this. So you've got your leaves.
Yeah.
And I'm imagining if you apply any sort of heat underneath them, they're going to wither or burn.
So
or
we're not using the leaves for cooking.
Right.
the whole tree is quite, they say, sterile. It's good for, there's nothing sort of nasty in the wood that you're going to ingest. So there's particular woods that are recommended for cooking.
Oh, I see what you mean, right.
Yeah, which is hence why I've picked the leaf for cooking, for that purpose, toilets.
Well, let's move swiftly on. There's an interesting... Is that a bower? No, it's a sort of a fence structure going on over there.
The hazel tree is also fantastic for making fences. And one of the things I do on my courses as well is make an outdoor sauna. So to make an outdoor sauna, hazel is a very good tree for that because you can find one with a lot of branches on it and cut down really long straight ones. You bend them over into arches and create an igloo kind of shape. And then you can put a big tarpaulin over the top of it and heat up
From the tarpaulin tree.
Yeah, exactly. You could do it more natural if you had a lot of time. And make a little natural shelter, which I also do on my courses, make natural shelters. I haven't done it with the sauna, though, because I think people are really keen to just get in the sauna and get a structure built. Heat up some rocks and take some water in, and it's a lovely... I don't really like man-made saunas, but for me, an outdoor sauna, and then you step out into the woods is just, quite magical. So that's something... I do that in London, so... And I also like to relate some of this, what I do, back to... different indigenous cultures around the world. My friend's Canadian, and she said the outdoor sauna is very much a part of their culture. And actually, it was when it was colonized that the Indian Native Americans, they used this technique to help purify themselves from all the toxins that they felt they were being exposed to.
I wonder how they'd have coped in London, knowing that there's X amount more toxins going on.
Yeah, so maybe we need to have regular saunas for all of Londoners, really.
Yeah, I mean,
To purify ourselves.
I don't think it would be a bad time to mention the number of deaths that happen every... I know it's not a happy subject, but for goodness sake, somebody needs to be doing a lot more about it than anyone is. The air quality in London and other cities in particular, but just generally, is shocking. Was it 50,000 deaths a year? Tens of thousands of people dying each year because of the poor quality of the air.
Absolutely.
We need at least more saunas, but maybe something a little bit more drastic.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I hope I can, in some small part, play some role in helping people to get more enthusiastic about nature and the value it provides us. I mean, it's a very small contribution, but if everyone makes a small contribution, you hope it has a bigger impact. But
well, it's a massive deal, isn't it? I mean, the idea of the forest being the lungs of the planet is exactly right.
Yeah.
As you'll know, if you go out into a wooded area or something and suddenly you feel that the air is that bit cleaner.
Absolutely. And, you know, on some of my courses, we actually take things from the trees or the plants, but we do that very sensibly. So, for example, you'd choose, you know, trees where you can just cut down a branch rather than cut down the whole tree. And it just even with foraging or taking berries, making sure there's, you know, you're not taking everything from the one tree is enough for the birds and for other people to come. When you pick the flowers, you don't want to take them all because then there'll be no berries later on in the year. So it's trying to, you know, also create awareness, which, you know, Indigenous people around the world have done for many times, because even hunters and gatherers, they return to the same place in a lot of cases. So just taking a little bit as you go. So when I was in, I used to run expeditions with young people. And one of the experiences, we went to Botswana and spent a few days with the Kalahari Bushmen, which was an unforgettable experience, really. Yeah, amazing people. They can't quite hunt in the same way anymore. There's restrictions from the government of what they can do. But we did, a couple of days with them. And, yeah, the same thing. They just, rather than take all the leaves from a plant, they'll take a couple and they explain to us, you know, that's so it can keep growing, etc. So I try and also incorporate in my courses, as I said, about, you know, different things. I've, been on many expeditions in different parts of the world, and I try and bring that in my courses as well.
That idea is so important in conservation and in, well, just survival, really, isn't it, on a global level. Is there something in mind in particular? Is there a particular aspect of environmental concern that weighs on your mind, or perhaps that you work particularly hard towards achieving?
I mean, it might sound a bit simplistic, but just reconnecting people with nature so they can appreciate it and look after it more and have a bit more of a relationship with it. When there's no relationship, there's nothing put into it. But if people develop up a bit of a bond with it, so... Yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was wondering what... Because obviously some people will try and get out into an open space. We were talking some episodes ago to a geographer about how few people, particularly in built-up urban areas, particularly in deprived areas, how few people get out to a green space, even though they've got one usually not too far away as the crow flies. What sort of reactions have you met with people who've been engaging with nature?
They're quite amazed, actually. I'm not saying this in a braggy way, but I haven't really had negative feedback from my courses. And I'm not just saying that all. Well, I'm just being completely honest with you. But I think that's because it's just so needed and people are not engaging with these, you know, with nature or bushcraft things. So
Quite a few deaths from people with heart medication issues, but they haven't been able to leave negative feedback.
Yes. However, I do stress, though, a little bit of knowledge can also be dangerous, because I did have on my course someone else showing something else, something he'd learnt from another course, and actually he was showing him the wrong thing. He was telling me he could eat a holly berry, and he thought it was hawthorn. So,
what would the effect be of eating a holly berry?
Well, he did eat one, and he was okay. Don't know the exact quantity you would need, but it's a poisonous plant, so,
Oh, you know what we should touch on? It's the obvious thing, but what about the mushrooms and toadstools thing?
I don't at London Bushcraft teach mushrooms and toadstools. It's quite a specific area.
Because that can go really wrong, can't it?
Yeah. So I mean, London Bushcraft might in the future, but not at the moment. So I always steer people to another organisation who's dealing specifically with mushrooms and fungus. So I would recommend that.
What about you personally?
A little bit, not loads, but a little bit. Yeah.
Well, we're heading down past a junior jogging team.
One of the other key things in London as well is to run these courses, looking for places where I can have fires and people to understand that I'm going to do it sensibly. Yeah, so that's, I guess, one of the things at London Bushcraft, the different sites about what we do.
I can't imagine anybody being over keen to have you fire starting.
No, so that's one of the challenges. But I do have, for example, in this Queen's Wood property, you can't in the woods have a fire. But behind the cafe, there's an area where I've, you know, had cooked a lunch with a family before who had made a private booking. So there are ways around it, you know, the restrictions of doing this in London.
We've moved a little way down the path and into the wood now. There's a lot more green and it's a lot taller, but what should I be seeing?
We've got quite a lot of beech trees. There's a couple of oak trees as well. So the ones with the smooth branches are your beech trees. These are not the best to, when they get a lot bigger, they're not the best to camp underneath because at any point one of the limbs can snap off.
Okay.
We also have, from Australia, which I didn't mention, and in Australia they call the eucalyptus tree the widow makers. Because the same thing happens with them, that all of a sudden, without warning, you know, you won't see, you know, possibly sort of with an oak tree, you might see a dead standing branch and you'll say, well, I won't camp under that. But, you know, it could be a live limb that just breaks off, so.
Well, you've opened my eyes already. That would never even occurred to me to think about things falling off.
Yeah, definitely. Always look up when you're camping, even if you're not in a beech wood. So, yeah, really not recommended to camp in a beech wood.
So that's, the beech area, I guess, those smooth tree trunks are set in an area which is, apart from being covered with leaves, fairly empty.
Yeah, the leaves don't decompose very well, so you often get not much growing on the ground around.
Oh, because they're blocking out the possibility of plants coming up. On the other side, however, it's a festival of green.
Absolutely. So, yeah, once you start to get to know the woods, you start to see. So we've got some ash trees. There's a couple of ash trees here. This is a magnificent tree. This is one of my favourites. All sorts of things you can get from this tree. It's fantastic wood for burning on a campfire. It burns long and hot. You know, have you ever made a campfire and it burns out really quick and you've got hardly anything embers to cook on? I don't know how often you've cooked on a fire, but
most of my campfire experience seems to be holding up various fire making implements to wet wood and achieving nothing for hour after hour.
Yeah.
It's the look of pained sympathy. How do we recognise our ash tree?
It's got pink. Sorry, not pink.
That would make it too easy.
If you have a look.
Okay, we're pulling down a branch.
Can you see the black tips on the end of the branches?
Oh yes. Okay, so not on the leaves themselves.
And the leaves are in pairs as well. The black tips. You know, it's a tree. It's not a plant. If people are, you know, it's not a small plant. And it also has these little keys growing on it. I don't know if we can see some. They're best in springtime, and you pickle them, and they're absolutely gorgeous. With cheese and crackers. See, this is the element I like to sometimes mix the, you know.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
No, the raw bushcraft with the maybe the more, I don't know what you call it.
The culinary, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. So I make some really nice pestos with some, it's one of the plants called Jack by the Hedge, dandelion leaf and steam nettle in the springs. Lovely.
That sounds delightful.
It is beautiful, yeah.
Do you make business out of that or is that just for...
I supply, if we're making a lunch, I often supply these things to complement the lunch. So on a course we might make some bread, then I'll bring along some of my pestos and some of my jam. Last course I had an adult's foraging birthday party. I even took along a bottle of elderberry wine as a bit of a treat.
Presumably that's a lot of work that's got to go into one jar of conserve or whatever it might be.
It is quite a bit, yeah. Yeah, I tend to do it in big batches, yeah.
So you were walking through the forest with a satchel on your back?
Yeah.
Chucking them in there?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
We're going to head down. Which way are we going? We've got a fork in the route. Yeah, this way. Down. Okay, off to our right.
I wish I had bought you some goodies to try now.
Yeah, I wish you had as well. I thought you were. I thought you were going to... I thought there'd be a feast element to this.
Should have had a bit more of a brief to bring you some goodies.
What did you get? I got one hawthorn berry.
Well, there's some blackberries if you want some.
Yeah, no, they're uncomfortably close to the path for me.
Yeah. Well, the ones higher up, I didn't have an issue. I wouldn't pick the ones down low, but the ones higher up I wouldn't have for me.
A little bit manky, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a few there. Yeah, it's getting a little... It's past their best at the moment, so we're left with the crumbs at the moment.
Right, exactly. I think maybe somebody's done this bush. Maybe they've had the good stuff. Have you been past here with a bag already?
Not with a bag. I have been past here, though. I had a nibble on the way.
So is it actually possible, or is this romanticising it, that you could fail to eat your lunch and come out for a walk and satisfy your hunger in the woods?
I mean, there's not a lot. I mean, you have to be a bit smart about your carbohydrates. Something like burdock has a lot of carbohydrates in it, but in London you're not allowed to uproot things. Not just London, that's across the board.
I need to know more here. What do you mean?
If there's any plants that you can forage, but it's the root you're after, you're not allowed to uproot, unless you've got special permission anywhere in the UK, actually. Oh. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. That opens the door onto foraging rules. What other rules do we need to know about?
Well, in specific areas, there's you're not allowed to pick. So in Queenswood, actually, you're not supposed to forage. So just remember that.
What?
Hurry, haven't we? So you need to have a look at, you know.
So that was an illicit berry.
It looks like it, actually. Oops.
Well, at least nobody.
Luckily, we only picked one.
Yes, and broadcast it. It would have been better if we'd snaffled a truckload and not broadcast it.
Better.
Yes, then nobody would know.
Oh, okay. Yes. I'm confused now what I'm agreeing to.
So we were taking that berry really by way of illustrating what you should not do. Don't ever pick berries in Queenswood.
That's correct. Or actually forage in general.
I'll put the berry back.
But actually all the other places that I run my courses, you can actually forage. This is one of the kind. This has got a Friends of Queenswood, which, yeah, look to protect it. So I guess that, you know, talking about protecting the environment, this is one of them.
We have stopped near it's a bit too green for a pond. A watering hole?
Yeah, watering hole, pond. One of the things I do on my course, actually, now we're by the water, is filter and purify water. So on a course, if you just come over here.
We're not going to end up drinking. I should explain. We're walking over towards an area that looks like it's made for the set of a horror movie. There's a fenced off area, and then in it there's the most appalling muddy lake covered over with algae. There could be dozens of corpses under that.
Are you not selling it again?
It's not easy on the eye, is it?
No. But, however, you're saying that, this could be a very good place to learn how to filter water. So take it out and...
Well, then drink it.
Well, at least see how clear you can get it. So on my courses, we've made some natural water filters. So even if you're not drinking, because they always say to drink the most cleanest source possible to you. And because we're here, this is not the cleanest source possible to us. We'd have cleaner stuff. But if in a survival situation... filtering that, getting out the turbidity, and then boiling it, you can get out, you know, the viruses, bacteria, parasites as well. The one thing that's hard to get rid of is if there's chemicals in there, but I actually teach people also to make charcoal as well.
What does that do for you?
Charcoal helps to remove some of the chemicals. Perhaps not as good as a commercially made one, but it would do something if you're in a survival situation.
As in, what, you filter the water through charcoal?
Yeah, so you could put it through a container, you know, get some bark, put some natural material in, filter the water, or you can use clothes as well to help filter it in to get out, get out the turbidity.
So one of the skills it seems necessary to have, or one of the facilities that you need at your disposal in a survival situation is the ability to make fire.
Absolutely, yeah. Should we walk up here? Actually, I've got some good things to talk about.
Yeah, sure. Fire. We're rounding Corpse Pond, as I shall from here on know it.
So I wanted to show you this fallen birch tree. So this is a fantastic tree to be able to identify. Like I talked about, the ash is fantastic for lighting fires. This is even better. Has a lot of natural oils in it. So the bark, if you get a small ember, small flame, and you can peel the bark off. Some of them peel easier than others, but if you get a knife, you got a knife into that, you'd be able to peel it a bit easier. This is a fantastic tree, so always look under a birch tree for little twigs and things like that, because the wood's going to burn fantastically. You can also tap this tree. I've made a wine from this tree.
This particular tree?
Yeah, but well, not this particular one, but this birch trees. Yeah, otherwise you would be accusing me of destroying
another
it.
Crime that we need to register.
So same with the wine, you know, tapping a tree. You need to pick a tree that's healthy and not go back to the same tree year on year, because you're taking you're taking sap out of the tree.
Yeah, I'm sure I've heard this story about people travelling through the bush and tapping some sort of plant to get water out, but then stoppering it back up so that it can be used again or it can replenish.
Absolutely. So, yeah, you need to stop it up. I've tried a few different methods and, yeah, I found one that works for me.
Just in case the listener happens to be passing a tree right now and wants to immediately tap it, what do they need?
Well, the first year I did it, I did what I thought was the bushcraft way. So I did it with a knife and made an incision into the tree. And then I put a little stick, carved a little stick flat on one side and put it into the tree. And then I put a container, I just had a plastic bottle that I tied underneath it to catch it. However, it was very hard to patch the tree up. It's like putting a plaster on the tree. Mm. So researched it a bit more, and the next year I actually drilled a little hole and put a little plastic tube in it. Not really the bushcraft way, but actually I found that it was better to plug it up, because you could get a circular then stick and plug it up and make sure it wasn't still leaking the sap. So, yeah, a bit of combining man-made and, natural stuff, if it's in the interest of nature.
So what happens if you let in the case of the first tree, does it sort of bleed out? What happens to it?
Well, the tree's still there, but, it can continue for a couple of weeks, because it only draws up the sap for a few weeks, so... A few weeks of the year, so I'd continue doing it for a couple of weeks if you didn't do it. And that needs that nutrients for that year.
Oh, so you've really hobbled that poor tree.
Sorry?
You killed the tree.
No! I kept going back and patching it up with... I use wax, actually.
Just stand there for a fortnight with your finger in the hole.
Yeah. Anything in the name of nature.
You mentioned we might be looking at fire.
Yes.
So how do... Yes.
Yes, what would you...
Well, there's a picture of you on your website.
Yeah.
And it appears that you're flourishing fire out of thin air.
This is the one thing actually people really enjoy doing on courses. So there's a variety of methods you can light fire with. There's a friction fire method using, you know, two sticks to create fire. There's flint and steel, which in this country was used for, you know, quite a long time before matches. Other cultures, for example, around the world have moved on more quickly from using, you know, depending on what they had in their environment. So in Australia, before white settlement, they were still using the friction fire lighting method. But here, and it's also a wet country as well, maybe they had to be a bit more, you know, creative on how they could make fire easier.
So what's the go-to method here if we needed to start a fire right now?
Well, we'd need to use friction fire lighting. However, we do also need a knife so you can carve the size of the wood as well.
Well, that looks a knife, no problem. Let's assume we've got one of those, but we're on a damp day. How long before we could get a fire started? From a standing start.
Day is not really a problem if you know how to get around it. So there's different ways you can try and get into it, even if when you've got your branches that you're going to put on your fire, to try and get into the heartwood so you can carve off all the and get into the dry wood of the branches, the heartwood. So you can get a fire going in all sorts. You just need to be a bit more creative. You need a lot of very fine sticks to get it going, because we all, you know, with fire lighting, we go into it on my courses about the science behind fire and how, you know, about the surface area and what size twigs you need to work your way up to get your successful fire. And fire is all about preparation, so the more you're prepared, the more you're going to have success.
So how long will we be looking at, do you reckon, from a standing start?
The preparation?
No, if we needed to start a fire right now.
And we had all the everything we needed to go. 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Astonishing. And what's the prep time? A week?
Well, you want to collect enough wood as well.
Yes.
You've got to collect. If you're doing a friction fire, you need to, you know, have a bit of time. So a couple of hours if you're doing it from friction, if you didn't have it with you there.
So you want a team of helpers, and then the maestro steps in and does the thing.
Yeah. But there's various other methods as well. Flint and steel, if you had that with you, and it just depends how many people you had collecting firewood, really. Depends on the age group collecting the firewood. With children and adults is a big difference, so that's a hard question to answer in a way.
Presumably the age of the adult is also important.
I
imagine past a certain age they'll bend down for their first piece of firewood.
Quite right there.
Remain there.
This is an area where we do a bit of shelter building, so natural shelter building.
Plenty of fallen timber where we are.
Yeah, fallen timber and lots of leaf litter. So, you know, all of these things are possible in London to, yeah, work on these skills and learn different things.
How come we're not seeing more abandoned shelters? I presume there must
actually
be lots of bushcraft people.
We did see one up on the other end. I should have pointed it out. And they're actually here, just here today, there was a group here. I think they were a forest school group. So it's well-used wood.
What sort of people do you get on your courses then? I've picked up that you're taking couples out to do private courses and some children. Are you one of those corporate away day type events
so
as well?
Corporate away days, birthday parties for adults and children, school bookings as well. So one school I'm working with, it's a really interesting program. The kids are studying, the year six kids, and they're studying Native Americans, the Ojibwe tribe actually. Right. And we talk a lot about, you know, they used to make birch canoes and hunt and gather, so we talk a lot about that. And then, you know, in the course they learn more about the Ojibwe tribe but get to put it to life. So we light a fire, we talk about how they used to light a fire, we light a fire together, and we talk about how they used to forage. We make something like a wild soup, and it really gives a sense of bringing things to life. I do bespoke courses, so people come to me and ask, they want something, and then I'll just try and create something with what they want and how many people they've got and where they're based as well. So I've got different locations I use in London, so I just try and base around their needs and desires. And I've just taken a group, it was a small family booking actually, and they wanted to go camping, and we went in, she didn't want to go very far from London, we went in Essex in a campsite there, and she's just come back to me and said she wants me to go up to take her to Scotland. So doing all sorts of things depending what people are after, really.
And that's going to present loads of challenges, presumably, with different plants being up there. And so you've got to know all the flora and fauna of the different regions as well.
Yeah, and they do change quite a bit in the different, and the altitudes as well.
Right.
It's not like going from England to Australia. So the differences aren't that as extreme.
If you had to characterise London in terms of those qualities as a distinct from somewhere else in the world, what are the sort of characteristics that London has?
I think it's a plentiful place for nature, as I was talking about before. Yeah. It's a very green city. I think it's a great place for foraging, but maybe I'm biased.
We're heading back to the cafe now, where I intend to forage myself a large slice of cake. I've just got one question, actually, Romaine. Did you say you live in a house in London?
Yes, I live in a house in London, yeah.
What does your garden look like?
Jungle. Jungle. I've got weeds growing that other people perhaps wouldn't have there. Yeah, I don't really like manicured gardens. I like wild spaces, so my garden's a wild space as well.
So your neighbours are always looking out of the window at your tutting?
Yeah, and fires and things like that. In East London. They're used to me by now, though.
If people are interested in getting in touch to do with courses, whether bespoke or more general, how can they best approach you?
Should
they look for smoke signals rising from centre of the forest?
Smoke signals that will say www.londonbushcraft.com.
Wendy Payton, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you. My heart aches for some far off
place, no one could have led you. And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Wendy Payton. Thanks too to Sue Sinton Smith and Bernie Barclay. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe.
Sounds you ain't never seen the light before. Just a stone's throw from your front door.